I'm sorry, what's the title again?
As the story grows. Yeah.
So say this really
aggressively. I'm horrible with stuff like that.
We did it so good.
I know. Gosh, give me a second. Okay.
Just report it.
Just report it.
Go.
Hello, I am Saddle Sarah.
And I'm Tyron Taylor.
And we are from
This Way to the Egress.
And you are listening to As the Story Grows.
I was going to say As It Grows.
As It Grows? That's a different podcast.
Get it? As the Story Goes?
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah. Try it one more time.
Okay. Hello, I am Saddle Sarah.
And I'm Tyron Taylor.
And we are from
This Way to the Egress.
And you are listening to
As the Story Grows.
You've released two songs so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I forget what they're called.
Let's not pretend and so grow. So
look what I did to you. Now I'm so in there. I'm running around in there.
It's not So It Goes. First of all, song. We won't go.
Wait, you have a song called As the Story Grows?
No.
As the Story Goes.
That'd be amazing.
No, it's not.
So It Goes.
They're not even drinking. This is great. You guys are cheap dates, man. If I gave you guys beers, woo!
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
Hello, faithful listeners. Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav. With me, as always, is my cousin and my cohort, Steven. Steven, say hi to everybody.
Howdy.
You went cowboy on them. That's weird.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Super, super stoked to introduce the guests that we spoke to this week. There is a pride and joy band from the Lehigh Valley called This Way to the Egress that they practice less than a mile from my house. Blowing up, getting huge, doing it right. They talk a lot about the industry. They talk a lot about what to do, what not to do. And I'm really excited to have gotten an opportunity to sit down and talk to them. Steven couldn't join us over the phone for that interview. Something about scheduling, but that's cool. I sat down with Taylor and Sarah and spoke to them. And had a great conversation, and I'm super excited to let everybody hear it.
Well, here's the deal. You know, sometimes in the future, there's going to be times like that where it might go one of us rather than both of us. And, you know, we'd rather have the content than be like, okay, we can't both be here. We don't really have much else to do. So let's just not do anything. You know, it's easier sometimes to do that, just split up a little bit. And yeah. I think sometimes that helps create more content. So, not particularly this episode, but possible future episodes. So,
absence makes the heart grow fonder. You and I have been so nice to each other since I did an interview without you. I think it's really helped our relationship.
Absolutely.
Got weird. Got weird in here, didn't it?
No, you know, it's just one of those things, man. Like, you know, two people can get more work done than one project with two people. You know, we can do two more projects if we split up on occasion. Not that I want to split up. I think we need to definitely keep together with these interviews. But, you know, if one of us can't make it and we're going to score a conversation with somebody that week that's really awesome, right, I say record it, you know.
If you've got a local band from Lancaster that gets an opportunity to sit down and talks to you and it's on a night that I can't do it, hit record, dude. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
And the thing people need to understand also is that we record this stuff over, you know, Google Hangouts. And, you know, so there are a lot of 99.9% of the time we're not in the room with people when we're talking. The energy is different, you know. It's just one of those things you just have to deal with, you know. It's always going to be my preference to get in a room, a round table, totally, and talk to people and actually have the energy of, like, you're hanging out with people. But and anytime we can do that, we're going to, but that's not something that is going to produce weekly episodes.
Right.
So this particular episode is going to be a little self-indulgent in terms of, you know, we live here on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, and we care about a thriving music scene for ourselves and for others. And so Travis, living smack dab in the middle of the Lehigh Valley with a really good music scene, much better than Lancaster, in my opinion. I mean, you guys have a music fest. Like, it seems like every week something's going on music related. And
we like to party and play our instruments around here.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is great. And Lancaster's building up a lot of venues, and it's becoming a kind of a new venue city. But there isn't a lot of, like, people lined up to play in all these great bands or anything. There's a couple out there, but, you know, not like Lehigh Valley. That's definitely a music, and particularly a heavy music area.
Yeah, we like our metal and our punk. Definitely,
that's
a huge,
great.
Huge punk area.
Yeah,
yeah. We're like dead center between Philly and New York too. But
yeah,
but
yeah.
When we get an opportunity to kind of show somebody locally that we want to expose to, mm-hmm, people who, I mean, you know, you see the statistics on this podcast. We don't have that many listeners, but I mean, I had somebody listen in Slovakia before BBC switched over. You know what I mean? Like, who knows who's listening?
Thank
to this
you,
right
Internet.
Now. Yeah, right. Way to go, Internet.
Well, you know, I want to encourage listeners. You know, the first three stories we've done have been very Tooth and Nail Records and very you know, Where Are They Now, metal music bands we grew up listening to, in particular, like, some of the Christian artists we liked. No big surprise that Travis and I are both Christians. We have a abundant amount of bands that we love, both in you know, mainstream music and Christian CCM, whatever. And we don't try to define the music based on those things. We try to just talk to people where they're at. And so you're going to have some episodes that are going to be wholesome family entertainment, and you're going to have some episodes that are going to be, you know,
total bullshit.
And you're going to meet the artists right where they're at, and it's because it's about the story that we're telling. And so, you know, but the last, you know, the first couple episodes have been very, like, one-sided. So I just want to encourage listeners to realize that, there's going to be something interesting for everybody each episode. You know, we talk about a lot of different things, and with the artists and just in our intros. And, you know, I don't want people to get the habit of, you know, being too selective. I know you can't avoid it completely, but it'd be nice for people to tune in every week and just listen to what some of these artists you don't know are saying and doing. And that's going to be a great way to discover bands you don't know about.
This week, this is a perfect example of that, because This Way to the Egress is definitely as niche can get. This is like stepping back into the 20s and listening to a burlesque band. They are not anywhere near what the rest of the stuff that we listen to sounds like. But you have to listen to Sarah. Sarah is a smart lady, and she knows what she's talking about when it comes to how the industry runs. She gets into licensing. She gets into publication stuff that, I mean, I've been playing music for 20 years, and I was like, I didn't know you could do that. Like music, up and coming musicians, if anybody is anywhere near interested in ever making a dollar off this mess, please tune into what she has to say. It isn't about, oh yeah, I'm hanging in there waiting for the heavy band. That's cool. Oh, I don't know who that is. I'll skip them. Yeah, I understand what Steven's trying to say. Just listen anyway, because it's not an interview. It's a conversation. And I mean, if they start talking about something insane that has nothing to do with music, how do you know that it doesn't directly relate with something you're into? You know what I mean?
This conversation we had, well, that you had with them, is very it's not just about the past, but it's also about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of important independent artist type information that I really took away. I immediately wanted to start like investigating Spotify and all those other streaming sites and kind of look into what they're doing. And
definitely,
they were a lesson in how to do music DIY, and that is precisely what this podcast is for.
Yep.
And so, yeah, great conversation. I enjoyed it, and
they're all about the live show. I mean, everybody says you got to hear this, you got to hear this, and you go on Bandcamp and you download it and you throw it on the pile of all the other things you mean to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
This band's touring, and you can catch them because they're actually doing it right. Mm-hmm. They're going to climb in a van named Clarence, and they're going to drive around, and they're going to try to get near you. If you get a chance to see them, you have to check them out. Honestly, seriously, when's the last time you saw a tear it up tuba player? You've never seen one. Believe me, this cat will blow your mind. These guys are amazing. Guys and girls,
and because, amazing. Because this band does tour and does play out and does work hard outside of recording and writing and posting stuff on the internet, they are going to be more successful than bands like, you know, like our band, who we haven't even played out yet, and we aim to do that, but we haven't done it. There's definitely a lesson to be learned about working hard and making the time and sort of committing to working as a band and making it work as a job.
Like them or don't like them, you have to check this out. You just got to see this. But anyway, enough. Yeah. Let's digress. Let's digress from the egress.
Let's. Yeah.
I wrote that down. I thought that was so clever.
You're spilling your clever was actually planned out, which is terrible.
Oh yeah, that makes it formulaic and gross. You're right. I'm gonna crawl right.
One thing that I wanted to make sure I did with the podcast was kind of represent my local area. I think this is a pretty hip town. Not just Bethlehem, but the Lehigh Valley's always had a pretty cool music scene. Yeah. Even back from when I was a kid and I went to shows. And
yeah, it's up and coming as well.
Yeah, still is, I think. So I wanted to kind of get some of the local folks that shows that I go to and that I enjoy, and especially anybody that's doing stuff themselves. I looked all over your website, and I don't see anybody helping you guys. It looks like you do everything by yourself.
Oh, like DIY.
DIY I saw on that Kickstarter video.
Yes, yeah. Do it with you.
Yes, you did it with me, all right.
A lot.
Well, $35 worth. I know. Yeah, which doesn't get you much nowadays. No. But I gave you what I can give you, you know. But anyway, I was really stoked to talk to you guys. I was just going to ask a bunch of questions, kind of like, let's do the whole, like, timeline thing, like, where'd you get started, everything. How did you guys meet? Who got it started? On the website, it said that you started the band.
I did.
Okay. So it was just you and an accordion, and you were like, I need 15 more people? Or like, how did this whole thing get rolled?
I started writing songs, and I knew I wanted an accordion player. I couldn't find one, so I started learning accordion, and then I started looking for band members. And
you learned the accordion in 2008?
Yeah, actually.
Really?
My mom, who is also a musician, found an accordion teacher for me, the only one around in Easton. And I started playing, and then I started looking for musicians.
Any keyboard experience?
Yeah.
I taught
myself piano. I don't know if okay. That counts.
Sure.
He's been playing music since he was like 3.
Got it. Okay. Wow. I didn't expect. Clearly, why you're here. I wouldn't have guessed that you only picked up the accordion for Egress. I would have thought you had a little bit more accordion time.
I'm a really good faker.
Yeah.
I am.
Not bad. He fooled me. So, take us from there. What happened?
And then I just looked for musicians, and I went through...
How? Craigslist? Magazines?
Yeah, Craigslist, walk-ins, one-night stands.
Don't you dare.
Do not edit that out. That was juicy.
It should be backed up a little bit that he found...
Focus me.
Before we had connected, he had found... John, our tuba player, through Craigslist.
Okay.
In New York, John had a solo project, Argyle Johansson.
I was in his band.
And Taylor played accordion and cello in John's band.
Right.
So he knew John before John had our
and
tuba
this was,
player at John's band.
I was still
band.
Developing the band. Like, it was just an idea.
Got it.
So
got
he
it,
was just getting out and playing with as many people as he could. And then we crossed paths and just really hit it off. Stop it. And then, at the time, I knew our original drummer, Matt, from other bands I had played with. And was like, one day I'm going to find a band that you're going to be awesome in. And when that happens, I'm going to come and get you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, once we had decided we were going to start playing together, he had said, we need a drummer. And I said, well, I know one. And for the longest time, it was the three of us.
Right.
And then, our trombone player I played with in another band based out of Stroudsburg. And... we eventually brought him in, like, for shows here and there. Like, this is back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He'd play shows here and there. And then a friend of ours, the first Egress fan ever, Patrick, who does our merch, told us about Jacqueline, who played mandolin, and was like, you should have her come in and play mandolin. So she would come in and play occasional shows and record. And then around 2011, right after our first album went, John...
Dropped, as the kids say.
Dropped?
Is yeah,
that what's,
I'm
okay.
pretty sure I've heard people
that
say
that.
People
dropped.
Who are cooler than me say dropped. So
okay.
Yeah, let's
so
go
yeah,
with that.
When we dropped that album in 2011, John showed up one day and was basically like, you know, man, I play tuba. And Taylor was like, well, then get one.
Worst pickup line ever, by the way.
No way. Our eyes got wide. We were like,
for us, it was a good pickup.
Yeah.
And he's been here since. And he's basically, he played one show with us and was like, I am your bassist. And then once he solidified the band, like, Joe started staying and Jacqueline started staying. And then, which brings us to our current lineup now, except with Zach Martin on drums.
Matt was, I don't remember what year it was, but he played at the, across from the Levitt Pavilion outside the Steel Stacks, right? He was the guy that had like a percussion rack over his toms.
Yeah.
Dude, he was amazing. As a drummer, I stood next to him and I was kind of like, wow, the whole show, he was killer.
He was.
Where did he take off to?
He's still local. He is starting a company called Beatbox Drums.
Okay.
And it's an idea he actually had from playing with the band and trying to tour with all this gear, and it's actually really awesome. I suggest checking it out. I don't think he has a website launched yet, but he is
on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a compact kit. He built the drums himself, and it all fits into a giant box.
Like opens.
With
it's
wheels.
Like a big, yeah. It's really,
everything, except for your hardware bag, like your cymbal bag. Everything fits in there.
You take and just carry it off.
So that you don't... But it actually sounds really good. Like, he did a really great job building the drums. But once he decided to do that, it just got to a point where we were getting so busy that we were like, we need, you know, we can't do shows without drums, you know? And he just wanted to start going in a different direction. So we politely, you know, parted ways. And then we had Chet Sullivan on drums with us for a period of time.
I feel like I saw him too. That would have been Music Fest.
Yes.
Yes.
Up around the corner in that really cool stage across from
Leader Plots.
Is that it? Yep. Across from the Donegal Square or whatever.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, I saw that guy.
And then he got a new job whose schedule was demanding, and he was saying he couldn't commit to all the shows that we needed. But that he was dabbling in trumpet and wouldn't mind playing trumpet with us here and there. So we actually, a friend of mine at the Wise Bean in Bethlehem, like the best coffee shop around, said, oh, a good friend of mine plays drums and he's really awesome. And we started asking around about him and everybody's like, he is really fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And then we started stalking him.
That's healthy.
We were like, holy shit, this kid is fucking insane. And we approached him and he joined us the beginning of the year. And like, I think it was actually, his first show was in the beginning of the year, 2014. And he did all of the drums on this new album.
Mm-hmm.
And has been.
That was a much better timeline than what I did.
Like, but
it was in order and everything. She did well.
Ridiculously.
Yeah, and he's become.
Could you just leave? Maybe just me and her.
That would probably be better. In my little hole.
But no, seriously.
Go play with my dog.
While we're on that train, his drums have like, and his drumming style have seriously impacted the writing on this new album.
I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah, he's really, really
which we
awesome.
Just picked up.
I saw that on the Twitters. Yeah.
Oh.
Though we can't distribute it yet, but it's still exciting.
You could accidentally drop one here.
I probably could.
As long as, we're still cool by the end of the podcast. All right, good. Well, that's good. I like that. I saw on the website influences including Primus. That caught my attention. Big Primus nut. And some other stuff that I guess it makes sense to get into the mix of what you guys play. Primus surprised me, but I guess I can kind of see that too because Les does all of his crazy
stuff. Well, that and Primus is so wacky.
Yeah, a little.
So awesome.
A little. Yeah, they're pretty much the
no
best
one
at
like
that.
I mean, we've
there's
all.
Still no one.
Yeah, and we've all. At different points of our life have fallen in love with Primus.
Yes.
Never fallen
that.
Out, but like there's all we've all had different points in our life where that was like the our
totally.
Go-to band.
Totally.
And the it's great doing like our John, our tuba player, has been trying to start a Primus cover band on
right.
tuba.
Yeah.
But he's so busy with what he's doing with us and his other stuff that he's got going on, the other bands he plays with that it hasn't. But we've been trying to cover Fisticuffs. Like, we all know it. We just haven't, like, been actually practicing it. Like, occasionally
a
sound check will kind of noodle with
it. I mean, imagine
that
based on a tuba.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the best way to attack covering a Primus song would probably be just not having a bass guitar player.
Yeah, totally.
No one can play like that
absolutely.
Anyway. Yeah, he's bananas. I've seen them three times, I think. And I was fortunate enough in 2003, I saw them in Tower Theater. They covered Seas of Cheese in its entirety. So I was going to ask, with some of the influences you wrote and everything, why such an abnormal, non-traditional style? Like, I'm not approaching, like, why the gimmick or anything like that, because I've seen you guys and you're not. But every other band, the guitar player, the bass player, the drummer, let's rip off Nirvana.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why this?
The only answer I can even fathom to guess at would be, with all the music I've been listening to all my life, a classical, death metal, everything, I think I just kind of
landed on an accordion.
Smashed it all. Yeah. Landed on an accordion and then smashed it all into one kind of mix for every song, almost.
Okay.
I think on a greater scale from the band as a whole, not as a, because he does majority of the songwriting and brings it, once he gets the main song done, the vocals, he brings it to the band and we all kind of like start working our parts and see what works, what doesn't, rearrange and stuff. But we all have very similar tastes in music, but also very diverse, and we all come from incredibly different backgrounds. And I think with how saturated everything is, we just got to a point where we're like, fuck it.
Yeah, right.
Like,
on.
Let's just do what we like. Why can't it be this? Why can't it be this? It's music.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't it be this? It can be. So what? iTunes doesn't have a drop down box for what genre we should be in.
Right. Good.
Which is a hurdle that we always which is a hurdle that we always come across. But you know what? It's like
you guys are alternative. I would totally put you in the same box as name a 90s band.
The Gin Blossoms.
Yeah, sure.
There you go.
There you go.
But yeah, no, but it's just. What else were we going to do, you know? If we did anything else, guys, it would be right there with Better Than Ezra.
Better, in my alternative collection.
Playing, we should try to open. Aren't they playing Bethlehem, like, in a month or two?
It could be the Bethlehem Alternative Festival. I don't know. Oh, Steven asked me to ask you guys. He says hi, by the way.
Hello, Steven.
And he asked me to ask you if you guys have ever heard of the Tiger Lilies.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We love the Tiger Lilies.
We saw them in New York and got to meet them, and it was really awesome. And
I just watched one video clip of them 5 minutes before you got here because I've never heard of them before, and the guy was standing 6 feet above the other two guys in mime makeup, or the closest I could describe it, singing in a very high falsetto. And I was like, I have to go back and reinvestigate this. And you literally rang the doorbell halfway through it, and I stopped. So I was like, well, I got to circle back.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Keep
it's
that
like
search on
two penny
because
opera.
They're three penny opera. It's a three penny opera. And they've been around for 20 years.
Tony Cooper.
Really?
Yeah. And, I mean, Matt Groening of The Simpsons is a big fan. Like, they've really been around.
Mm-hmm.
All the concept, you'll see all the concept albums they do.
I have to dig a little deeper.
30 albums. Mm-hmm.
What?
Something like that.
In 20 years?
Around there, something like that.
Man, they're cranking them out like.
Albums. I don't know.
I don't know.
Just a lot of albums.
Wow.
And they're just really awesome.
Okay.
Very eccentric.
I have to look into that.
We have a big band crush on
Tiger
Lilies. At least three of us do.
Raunchy,
at least three out of the
two
of us
they're
do.
So
I
obscene.
Know. It's so
are they really?
I mean, if you get offended at anything.
Not really.
Then that's another reason it's great to listen to.
Okay. All right, good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm going to check that out. Okay. How do you go about handling all this alone? The reason I ask is because everybody's in a band. We're all trying to get a Thursday night at the Fun House with the other 14 bands that all sound the same. And we can all get in there, blah, 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 blah. You guys have actually taken this cavalcade of yours all over the country, and I saw your little pins on the map. You guys have been out of the country.
Yes.
And you have no manager.
No.
And it's you guys. Just how the hell do you book a show in another country? Like, how do you even go about doing that without help? Like, can you kind of speak to, like, how... Like, I think Mike from ACV, he told me, didn't you guys tour on a train?
Yes.
We did.
What the hell are you guys doing? Like, I've never heard any of this before.
That's actually where Matt came up with the beatbox idea. We were all like, how are we going to make this work touring
it's
on
a very
Amtrak
urban
for
city
that?
Thing.
Someone actually approached us for that.
For the overseas stuff.
Okay.
That was like a part of a themed event, steampunk event.
Right.
So that was...
You guys are in pretty solid with that scene.
Which is... It's amazing, the support and the how they've embraced us and what we do, despite the fact that we were, you know, like... It's anachronistic, so I guess it makes sense, you know,
sure.
and stuff. And there is a sense of old time and a sense
definitely.
Of being sent through time and space by what we're doing. But, you know, we wear... We wear fluorescent colors and, you know...
You don't dress like weird 1920s robots from the future.
Yeah,
right?
But they are some of the most supportive fan base and amazing events. So that's how we ended up overseas. As far as everything we do in the States, we've done, except for the Amtrak, which we were approached by as well. That was a promoter in California who wanted to bring three... steampunk bands from the East Coast to the West Coast and thought it would be neat to do a cross-country train tour to get us there. And he ran a Kickstarter and we were one of the lucky troops that they brought. We were the only ones that were, there was, the other one was a duo, the other one was a trio. No, it was a duo for that. There's just two of them.
Correct.
And then there was five of us. Only five of us went. We did it without drums.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that was intense. But everything
else... I didn't know that. You guys had that. So you've been involved with two Kickstarter things.
Well, we've done... We've personally done two. We did one for $500, I think, for the $600. For our very first album.
Okay.
It was still kind of new then, Kickstarter
and stuff.
And we just didn't, you know, kind of know. And then we just did one for our last album. But that was just... a separate entity, and he said, if I can get funding for this, would you guys do it? And we said, okay, and he ran a Kickstarter for it.
Crazy.
But as far as gigging, we've had a couple of really awesome experiences. Like, I mean, well, first of all, Taylor's just amazing at not having boundaries. Like, where people say, that's not realistic, or you can't do that. Taylor just doesn't think twice and does it.
Then I just bother people.
Yeah. So our first ever show was in Boston.
When are we going to play a show together?
That's how stuff gets done.
It was.
Be surprised how many people, I mean, not that I've interviewed that many people, but you listen to testimonies on podcasts, and you'd be surprised how many professionals, names that you know, went and asked for the gig.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
You know,
they just walked up and tugged on the coattails. So they were like, dude,
no matter what you do,
mm-hmm.
it's really now in the relationships that you...
But there's also a balance, because you can't be obnoxious.
Right.
And you can't be self-absorbed, because they're doing their job, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, our first gig ever as a band was in Boston. No one knew us. We drove 6 hours. We cleared out the room. It happened to be a jazz festival.
Like one of these jazz festivals.
And we came in clanking and banging our accordion boxes.
How did you manage
cowbells on our
Yeah, it was... And they
so
were,
unjazzy.
It was so... And they left. There was like 3 people left, I think, in the audience, and they worked there.
Yeah.
And the...
Oh, people walked on you?
Oh, yeah. They were out the door. And the owner gave us like $40. And we drove home the 6 hours that night. We drove home, and we were like, we're gonna win. We gotta do this again.
You
know? And it just didn't stop. And then that that drive got us noticed in 2011 by the storyteller and songwriter Voltaire,
mm-hmm.
who's done, you know, stuff for Comedy Central, he's the animator who did like the Bud Bowl series and stuff.
All that crazy claymation in between the MTV stuff
back in the day when MTV played music.
I do.
Yeah, that was him.
Back in the those days.
Yeah.
Or was that too early?
Was that LTV, or did he just sing that too?
No, I think Al just used the same.
Okay.
Word. Yeah. But I remember the MTV moving.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was him?
Uh-huh.
Right on.
Yeah.
And in 2011, he was looking for, he picked us up to go on tour with him as his backing band and main support. So that was, and that was our first national. We had toured prior to that just like down south and back up by mainly, you know, just writing bands and saying, hey, we'd like to do a show with you, and just taking what we could get. And then in 2011, he brought us on our first national, which gave us little pockets in every city for the most part that we could tap over and over again.
Okay.
And then from there, we just kept going back. So we just, every time we do a national, we have, and it's changed. Not every city is the same. Venues close down, promoters change, and that relationships change. But
yeah.
There's been a pocket of cities that we still continue to ride just from that tour in 2011. But the last year or so, it's been like, it's, with the exception of the tour we just booked, it's all been people coming to us. We haven't even tried to book anything because we've been focusing on the album. So we've gotten to a point now where we're not even having to seek out gigs as much.
You know, also though, not to get boring, but like, you have to like treat it like a business, because what you initially asked was how we do all this stuff with just the two of us.
Right.
You just start booking and you just start acquiring all the skills that, after a while, I noticed it was just like running a small business.
Sure.
That's what it's about.
It can be awful.
Make mistakes and learn from it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And you have to. And you have to be willing to like humble yourself.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard as an artist to sometimes say, you know, you're used to saying, well, this is my art, and this is, you know, how I am. I know.
This is my art.
And it is dangerous. but, you know, it's different when it's a business and you're emotionally connected to the art you're trying to expand. And sometimes you have to be able to, like, sit down and say, I don't know better.
Yeah.
I need help.
Yep.
And we've worked with consultants. We have a current consultant now who is so awesome. And all he does is help us run the band. And not business at all, just work
it's
with our bandmates.
It's actually like band therapy, this guy. He's amazing.
That's interesting. I don't know of any bands. I know some bands on some higher levels, too. I've never heard anyone refer to a consultant. That's interesting to me.
Yeah,
I don't know anything about a band consultant. I jokingly pictured like 7 couches lined up in a giant office where you're all laying down, like, oh, when did it all start? You know what I mean? But like, I've never heard it referred to that way. Is that actually like on the guy's business card?
Kind of. Well, he...
Or is he just someone who knows what he's doing?
He's an old carny musician.
He's an old carny.
Okay.
You know, he was one of the founders of the band Circus Contraption, which we've been, like, in love with for many, many years.
Never heard of
him. He's a now he travels doing like a solo MC thing, vaudeville thing.
Named Armitage Shanks.
Yeah, and he's really
this rings a bell actually. I don't know how.
It's also a playoff. That's an old plumbing thing company. In England.
Yeah,
but, I wouldn't know it from there.
Armitage Shanks.
But he's this album probably wouldn't have been done without him because the stress of running everything, having day jobs. You know, running a band where essentially you're working with your peers and your friends, but there is still that play for power because at the end of the day, there's somebody barking orders, you know, and nobody likes to be,
and
you know,
emotions start running high. I mean, it's no secret.
Yeah, touring a band for 30 days, and you're, by the end, you're like, you know, you get in, you're like, this is great. By week one, you're like, why am I doing this? By week four, you're like, I hate these fucking people. I'm never doing this again. And then by the time you get back, you're like ready to start crying when you hug each other goodbye.
Right.
And you're like, I'll see you Monday at practice.
Or sometimes you're getting a squeegee and hitting him in the ribs.
Yeah.
Hey,
mm-hmm.
Who's you still running your mouth? That was funny. Still running your mouth? Whack!
It's the same thing. We got to consult before that stuff happened.
Yeah.
Dude, there was no helping my cousin's band, trust me. That was a circus contraption of its own. All right. When I saw you guys at, not the Levitt Pavilion, but the thing next to...
The Town Square?
Yeah.
Town Square?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever that thing's called. It was a sideshow.
Yes.
Like, I know that... You know, if you're a metal band, you try to match up the opening bands. You're not going to have a pop punk band because your fans won't like them. And if you're a pop punk band, you don't get the grindcore band because they won't like them. You guys fall into the alternative category, obviously, because iTunes says so. Your opening act was Sword Swallower. I saw somebody juggling stuff. There was all kinds of craziness.
Mm-hmm.
How does that come about? I understand it kind of falls into the whole. I don't want to use the word vaudeville if that's
no,
a
we
curse
love
word.
It.
With
we
you
love
guys, if you guys that's going to be a question I have later.
Mm-hmm.
Is like what is it that you guys want to be referred to and not referred to?
Well, when Taylor started the band, he had actually had in mind like there's a troupe like Circus Contraption. There's also another band called the Yard Dogs Roadshow,
okay.
And they were like music and circus and vaudeville and everything all combined.
Just like one big. Variety show in a way with a lot of music.
Cool.
And when he started and we were just a three piece bringing in with various musicians, we had like sideshow performers that kind of became members of the band and burlesque dancers that became members of the band. And every show we were throwing was like this big show and, which was awesome and we love it. And we still work with a lot of the circus arts, because it hits very close to home for a lot of us and we really enjoy it. And
yeah.
It's been a means of American entertainment since, you know, this country was founded and it's a really neat part of American history. But over time, the music just took over. You know, when you're managing, it's hard enough to manage a band when you're managing a troupe with, and you know, a dancer's needs at a show are very different than a musician's needs at a show. And when you're a musician trying to be a performing musician, but you're running a troupe, you have to now think of you, your own shit, your band, their shit, the dancer, their shit, the sideshow, and their shit.
Okay.
So over time, we kind of dropped it, and we only work with separate entities. The Unholy Sideshow was who you saw us with.
That's who I saw.
They're actually playing our local record release show on May 8th at the Funhouse. They're going to open.
Ah, the Funhouse.
That's at the Funhouse.
They're going to do what they do in the Funhouse?
Well, it'll only be one of them.
Yeah,
and he actually opened our last show there.
Yeah,
Yeah, we had an anti-Valentine party, and it was really great. So there's certain acts he can't do. It's a little restricted, but,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
For a half-hour opening set at the Funhouse, and then he does, like, a little thing in between our set where you can staple his balls to his legs for so much money and stuff like that.
Oh, people can staple his balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people can.
is it through the skin sacky part, or is it actually the testicle?
No,
it's
the through
skin.
The skin. Oh, yeah.
Come on, man. Man up. Totally kidding.
You need pliers.
Pliers. Ugh. Where on my notes? How am I gonna follow? Staple your ball sack to your thigh. Where am I gonna go from there? Okay. I covered the train, and there was the stapling of the ball sack. The Kickstarter for the album. I took part. I kind of held my wad towards the end because I was hanging in there for the vinyl.
Right.
I'm a record guy. And I've had some people on here. My old metal band, actually, he did a side project, and we did a Kickstarter campaign, and raised about $6,000. Cool. He came on here and logistically broke down, here's how great Kickstarter is, and here are all the awful trappings. Not trappings, wrong, bad choice of words. Mm-hmm. But here's all the things that you don't think of that right. will financially hurt you in the end. And right. I noticed on your Kickstarter campaign, you laid everything out. It looked like I was reading a menu from a restaurant. You had everything like, this is going to cost $114.11. Like, right. you guys had everything itemized. Talk about running it like a small business. Right. Felt like I was doing your taxes, you know? You guys had everything broken down. I know Kickstarter keeps a significant amount of money because they need to keep the lights on. But you guys obviously raised enough to get your stretch goal when you went to the vinyl and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
At the end, I don't want to know any numeric details, and we don't have to get into that because it's none of my business. But at the end, did it cover everything?
No.
No.
It only covered the recording of the actual CD with the producer. Yeah. That's all we got was right. enough to, which was all we, I mean, the vinyl, which was the stretch goal, we actually launched early because we were hoping, like, we used it as like, okay, we're going to do vinyl, like, we're just going to commit to it, and if we don't make it, we'll right. just hustle our ass and make up that money and yeah. get these people that vinyl.
Yeah.
Because we knew that with the percentage of what Kickstarter was going to take, it wouldn't get us over the hump that we needed to work with the producer that we did.
Right.
But we are, like, we hustle, and we're really grateful for the support that we have.
Yeah.
And we are, like, as of, you know, as of now, everything will be on time for the Kickstarter, except for the vinyl, because it's held, it's already paid for and in production.
Get out!
It's already paid for in production, but they're being pressed and checked. In the Czech Republic, and they're just backlogged so bad.
Everybody's backlogged.
It is. It's so bad.
If you want a Christmas single out, you're already late.
There's this big revival now with records, and it's just...
So they're projecting it'll be to us in July.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, you know, which...
I didn't even do an update yet.
This is breaking
news. Oh, don't worry about it. Tens of people will hear this podcast. We got to cover it. We did a podcast with... this podcast switched over to me and my cousin. Before that, I did about 20 episodes with a guy who runs his own label out of Colorado, Veritas Vinyl. And he came on here and gave a lot of details about what it's like to run a record company and how it's like, if you do something digitally, click, there you go, planet, you can have it. Mm-hmm. If you do something on vinyl, it is like, why does this take so damn long? And he went through and kind of explained, like, there's... The one thing about the vinyl revolution that hasn't really changed is the number of plants that are actually making them.
Right.
Like, there aren't new vinyl. And we were like, kids, don't start a record label. Don't start a band. Invest in, make records. Yeah. You'll have business forever. Like you'll constantly be working on something because you'll be backlogged for years. Hmm. But they just can't crank them out fast enough.
Well, we didn't realize it takes, first of all, that it takes as long as it takes just to make them.
Right.
But then we had, because the Kickstarter didn't cover the extra push for the vinyl, we had to make that money, and we ended up not being able to make up the money for the production until February. So February is when we got to push out. That's when we push click and said, okay, print the albums, make the vinyl, here is everything, you know. So even though the Kickstarter had ended in, what was it, October, and then the whole month of November we were recording, so we didn't gig at all.
Right.
And then December was kind of a flop because it was the holidays and we didn't book anything in advance. So we really, in January and February, just kind of gigged up the money to get it. So by mid to late February, we pushed it through, not realizing, thinking that we'd, by the skin of our teeth, we'll get it. But then, you know, they were like, well, yeah, you'll have the albums way sooner than the vinyl. Normally it would take this long, but it's actually going to take this long.
Yeah.
And then
did they tell you how long?
Yeah, they said sometime in July.
July 23rd
is when.
February to July?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably because you went to Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Went overseas. If you did something like Rainbow or something like that in California.
Also, we had like quite October. A time when we got the test presses back.
Oh, yeah, that
we
was
we put
an
it
issue.
On our crappy Walmart record player, and it was skipping every 2 seconds, and we were like, they're horrible. We had to send them back, and here we realized that the grooves were smaller because it's longer.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to find a better record
player. We were driving all around the valley listening to it, and everybody, our friends, like...
It was crazy. And I just, so I saw, and now I'm always noticing people's record players. Like, we could have called
But wait.
Oh, mine's
we
not.
We didn't just have a Walmart record player.
That great.
Our record player broke. The talk about how do we manage everything. I was having
that
one
day.
Of those days where.
Break a record player.
I don't know. I went. I was having the worst day ever because I spent 9 hours staring at a computer screen and I felt completely, like, just horrible because of all the business and the logistics of everything I was working on with the upcoming tour and the album and all this stuff. And lo and behold, I see a delivery truck outside, and I'm like, oh,
woohoo!
These are the test presses. And all of a sudden, my mood changes, and I'm like, this is going to be great. And I pour a glass of wine, and I open one up, and I'm alone in the house, and I'm like, eh. And I go and I put it on, and it just will not work. It just wouldn't work. It wouldn't spin. It wouldn't. Everything was all fucked up, and I'm like,
I called that would have been disheartening.
Yeah, it was. So then at that point, we were like, ah. And we drove and bought a crappy one at Walmart, and then it was just, it was,
$52.
Yeah, it was so bad.
Oh, no.
It was so bad.
I mean,
but,
nice.
But the silver lining in all of this.
Don't they call that a pigeon? When you buy a dress and you just turn the tag inside
right.
and then you return the next
tag. Is that what it is?
I think you pigeoned that.
We did.
That, yeah, nice.
I pigeoned.
I think Walmart's going to be okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally,
I think
totally,
yeah,
totally.
We'll be okay.
That record player will not, however,
right.
It was. but we're gonna actually do because of the delay. I think we're gonna have like a couple of vinyl release parties in August.
Woo-hoo!
So
yeah.
We'll do like a local one, one in New York, and maybe one in Jersey because we have a decent fan base in Jersey, or maybe one in Philly. But like 3 vinyl release parties where we'll have them like maybe specials on them and do like a set and get another band that has a new vinyl release out and just kind of make it like a super hip vinyl release party and kind of just make a, you know, silver lining out of it.
Sure.
Get a chance to kind of like do something a bit special.
Honestly, I don't know if this makes you feel any better or not, but us vinyl people, we're used to it. Everybody's always like, everything's ready except for some reason. Records take 7 months to make, so yeah,
right.
It's fine. No big deal. It happens. That album right there with the two ladies facing each other,
yeah.
And then that's the back cover art. That's my band's album. And,
oh, awesome art.
Thank you. 3 different colors, and we had to we do overseas to get the colors, and I don't think overseas understands what gold is because it came back like piss yellow. It's very
okay.
strange.
Yeah.
But we went through all that stuff too. And you just it's like when you back in the day when you made CDRs and you assembled CDs on the way to the show and you were like cutting out the art.
Yep.
I cracked the jewel case. Damn it!
Yep.
And you were like building. You know,
uh-huh.
Now it's just so much easier to just click a button and let disc makers or somebody just
right.
make the CD and it comes cellophane and everything's sexy and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Records, you're kind of doing that again where you're like building stuff. If you pull from here because it's cheaper. And this liner is cheaper
mm-hmm.
here, and this envelope is
right.
cheaper here.
Yeah,
it's the old days. You're, like, building them again, and then everything's ready, except, oh, dude, we didn't get these yet. Ugh. So then they sit there in a box. And, yeah, I understand. It's
frustrating. I mean, we actually went through the same company we've done our first 2 albums from A to Z Media, who've been really, really great to us, which is why we went back, and we got a really great... we have a local friend who runs a local business who does vinyl, and we would have loved to have sent it there, but... Because of the mass amount of CDs that we ran off,
mm-hmm.
Because luckily for us, that I mean, like most bands, that's our highest source of revenue
yeah.
is, you know, having a physical album to sell, and that's where we make the most of our money. So, they gave us like a decent cut
cool.
on ordering the vinyl and the CDs together. And originally, we thought we were only going to be able to do 100 vinyl, and because of that, we got to do 250.
Mm.
And they also come with download cards, and they're really cool colored vinyls.
Oh, yeah?
They're colored vinyl records.
Is that
yeah.
top secret what color they are?
No.
No, you can tell. It's P14.
Oh, that's my favorite of the P's! I thought you were going to say P15. I was going to be so upset. What the hell's P14?
It's kind of like the color of that blue on that. Is that a magnet?
Sarah, it's a podcast.
Okay.
It's like a teal.
Okay, it's got like a Jacksonville Jaguar kind of a blue.
Kind
color.
Of, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. I have a quick question about the video for Clarence.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, amazing job.
Oh, thank you.
My little tiny indie rock band that me and my friends do here and everything, we shot our own lyric video and the lighting and just it just looks like a bunch of college kids in their first, you know, I have an iPhone and he has an iPhone, let's make a video. You guys put a lot of work into it. You did the whole like old timey silent movie kind of a vibe and everything. Amazing job. I really like, there were so many funny quirks about it too. Like while someone was moving those paper waves back and forth, they folded
and
funny.
You can see them, right?
You can see totally, the hands and totally. Stuff. Your tuba player was sticking out the back of the boat. Right, it just made it so great. Yeah, it made it so much. It added to the charm. But I thought I heard, wasn't Clarence your van?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
It is. Clarence is our van. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tie that together for me. Is the song about your van?
No, actually.
You actually named
the van Clarence. Well,
I want
this
story.
We were
this is such a cheesy part. Tell me the story why the name is, but I just, no, I thought you, that, you I thought originally it was going to be about your van, and then at the end, the van drove away, and I was like, no, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, no, so when we went on tour with Voltaire in 2011, we needed to get a 15-passenger van.
Uh-huh.
So what we ended up, we got Clarence, who was not named at that point, and we kind of name everything, our instruments,
right.
You know, we're just those type of people. And so we got this 15-passenger van, and we completely overhauled it, and sanded it, and painted it, and tinted the windows, and built a cage, and all this stuff. But before he was painted, and, you know, made all fancy, and he was sanded, I was following him to our friend's house, who helped us do it. So he was driving the van, and I was in the car. And you know when, I mean, you're used to doing, you know, doing everything yourself music-wise. We had just released Clarence as a single.
Okay.
And we were, it wasn't released yet. We had mixed it. So we were constantly listening to it. Every new mix in the car, 4 weeks going, and he says, going back and fixing it, not having a couple of days to do anything, going back. So I was listening to it on repeat in the car watching him, and I was kind of delirious. Like, just, it was from the week we were having.
I have
and
been there.
Yes, and I could see the van like this, and then he's like, ba ba da, ba ba da, ba. I'm like, that's, and I call him up, I'm like, because we couldn't think of a name, it had to like hit us. I'm like, that's it. It's Clarence. Clarence is the van. And he's like, okay, Clarence is the van. So it just happened.
So the van got named from the
song.
So.
I'm going to get a vanity point. I have to figure out how to best put Clarence abbreviated.
Hmm. Work on
it
later.
It could be 7 letters. I think.
Listeners, if you come up with any ideas, we'll be... Morning Zoo. Now we need that noise in the background. Okay, interesting. I did not know that. Going back to the Kickstarter, you said it was going to cost you to get your producer. Whew, this guy. I looked him up. Mr. Greenewalt.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was it like? First of all, let me read what I wrote about him.
Okay.
Carries a ukulele... Everywhere.
He does?
Everywhere?
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Or is that something cool to write on Wikipedia?
No.
I mean, he didn't bring it to the bathroom with him.
Oh, okay. Well, then Wikipedia is a liar.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But everywhere else, yes.
No kidding.
Never left home without it.
And he started this thing, I forget what it's called, but he plays all 185 Beatles songs.
Beatles Complete on ukulele. Yeah.
That's it. BeatlesCompleteOnUkulele.com or whatever. In a day. It was like a marathon one-man concert where he plays all 185 original Beatles songs on a ukulele.
He's also a Beatles expert. Which was pretty
goes
amazing.
Without saying. Right.
Yeah,
unbelievable. And he's done that 4 times. Started a 366 Visions campaign while he was undergoing cancer treatments and lost his voice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up. I'll put all this in show notes with links and everything. And that's where you recorded. His studio is called 366 Visions Factory.
Yep.
In Brooklyn. Okay. And he's worked with little people that you've probably never heard of. Iggy Pop, Rufus Wainwright, Rick Ocasek, Joe Strummer. That Joe Strummer, right?
Yeah,
not some other like dude who lived up the street named Joe Strummer.
No.
Okay.
Philip Glass. That was a big one.
Philip Glass. I forgot to write him down. What on earth was that? I mean, such a softball, stupid question, but I mean, to kind of call in like a big name, obviously he wasn't just hitting record and going, yeah, you guys are great, and eating a sandwich. I mean, what was it like to work with a producer? How far into the mesh of the band already did he kind of change things, you know? Like,
he was really awesome because he let, you know, like a good parent does.
Okay.
Like he would... challenge us, but let us come to our own conclusions.
Right.
So he never at any point was first of all, when it came to getting quality from us, like quality recordings, he was brilliant. He was patient and understanding. and had a great year. No, you could do that better. Nope, you can do it again. Try it again.
Okay.
Just reporting, try it again. Or that was great. That was the moment. You should really keep it. You know, he was so, as far as that goes, it was great. As far as molding the songs, you know, we went in there, like, we had done pre-production, you know, we had written and practiced this song, this album in 6 months. Mm-hmm. So we had just been playing the album through, like, nonstop, multiple times a week, over and over and over again for hours. So by the time we got there, like, we're pretty set on a lot of the stuff that we did, wanted to come through with these songs. But he would just say, he would challenge us by kind of saying, like, well, this is kind of giving this sort of feeling. If you're going for this sort of feeling, this might be a little better. Think about that. You know, like, it was never anything like, it wasn't hard producing.
Sitting around the block.
Yeah. You know, he didn't change what we did at all. He was just kind of like, you know, maybe this would have more impact here, you know, and it was, which was really, really, like, really awesome. But he also challenged us to, you know, I think we were kind of a challenge for him in the fact that we were a lot to handle, you know, there was, I don't mean a challenge in producing, I just mean a challenge to sit with us every day, because we're, like, in his space for 9 hours with this really kind of sometimes obnoxious music.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to, like, just know what to do with us. It
totally.
Was
also, the
really
way we
great.
Did, we did one song a day. So,
okay.
And I mean, we tracked it out, did vocals, mixed each song each day.
Interesting.
It was interesting. It was very interesting.
So he mixed and mastered it also?
He did not master it.
I'm sorry.
We had someone else master it.
Okay, all right.
But I just mean he mixed down the songs and said, okay, that's good. Did that every day. And then we had one more day at the end there, excuse me, to just go back if we wanted something changed. Which
okay.
wasn't much, because this guy used to mix and record like 70-piece orchestras and sit there at a fader and like he just has an insane...
It's an amazing gift.
Quick.
Also, one thing he did, we're a busy band. We have a lot of stuff going on.
You are, yeah.
And at one point he said, maybe you guys should start respecting
the
negative space.
No. I saw that in the video.
A little bit.
If you guys had one
but
thing
that
to
became,
say. Or,
yeah, it was funny because he was saying that a lot to us. And it made us think, you know, and that's what a good producer is there to suggest and,
sure.
you know, kind of help things out. And it definitely made me, at least. Yeah.
And that doesn't mean be simpler,
sure,
play
no,
less.
No. Sure.
Well, we had been
right.
having
Please
this debate
mm-hmm.
prior, too, because when we had written and done pre-production in 6 months, this album. You know, in less than a year, we wrote these songs, orchestrated them, arranged them, and then practiced them, and then recorded them, and they were done. And so there was some debate through that process, because we didn't have the time to get really, really nuts with everything. And we dissected everything, but, like, not the time you have when you're a DIY band and you could sit on it and marinate on it for a month and then come back.
Sometimes,
you know?
Too long.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. right. You know, so there was already some debate, and we need to orchestrate more.
Okay.
Certain members, I won't say who, was...
You can, they'll never listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, prior to it, I was saying... You know, there is so much happening here. Like, because we would all, he'd record a scratch track. We'd all take it. We'd all go learn it. We'd all write our own parts to it. Then we'd get to the studio, and then we'd, like, chop things up and cut things out.
Okay.
So, like, everybody was writing without hearing what each other was doing.
Right.
And unlike playing them for months at shows and stuff like that, like we normally do, and allowing it to evolve and let this person take this solo or this person back off here. So there was a lot of, like, fat trimming that needed to be done. But...
Gotcha.
There were a lot of really awesome parts that we all liked of each other's that we didn't want to cut. And prior to this, getting into the studio with Roger, I kind of had said, like, guys, we need to, like, really orchestrate what we're doing here. Because when you have only 2-3 instruments in a 6-piece band that can play a chord, like, you know, I can play chords, Jacqueline can play chords, but Taylor's even limited on the chords he can play on the left hand. So, like, tuba... trombone and drums aren't giving any quality to the chords because tuba's like our bass.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
Trombone is auxiliary, so
yeah,
he's not there all the time.
I would never think of it on this level, but yeah, okay. I don't know anything about the accordion, but
right.
Yeah, I hear you. You've only got your keys
mm-hmm.
and Jacqueline.
Yep.
Jacqueline's
guitar or banjo.
And that's it.
And then I do have my right side, which is like a piano on accordion, mm-hmm. but I do more rhythm.
So, but it's like, because the tuba walks all over the place, because Zach is an incredibly intricate drummer.
Okay.
I'm
stoked to hear him.
Yeah, the two of them alone don't leave much room, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean that their playing is like, you know, just it. And then you have Joe, who, you know, can kind of do auxiliary rhythm,
mm-hmm.
upbeats and stuff, but solos, you know, takes melody. He's trombone, he's playing, you know, we don't have a horn section, so he's taking the melody. So the three of us have this constant debate over who's doing rhythm here, what are you doing for rhythm here, how can I not step on what you're doing there, you're taking the lead there, I'm going to step back. And there was like, and going to Roger on hearing an outside perspective say, like, guys, it's okay to leave room. Like,
right.
Leave some room, you know, and was
whole,
it really
whole
valid?
New level. I've never thought of that before, because it's like, it's basically who's taking the lead, who's playing rhythm,
right.
and then you two
well,
can switch.
Well, and if you listen to our first album, it's like, we're just everywhere, and we're definitely evolving, and there's a lot to be said with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but definitely.
I think some of it comes from the fact that we were a three-piece at first, and we
right.
tried
we were
to sound...
to fill everything up.
You know, we were trying to, like... So I would be like, okay, I'm playing bass on my left hand, I'm doing this on my right hand.
Yeah.
He's playing, you know, cello sometimes.
Your
not
worry
even,
is that
you know?
We only have three people. They're not. It's not going to be powerful enough.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a six-piece.
And we've had to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
But Roger was really good at honing that in from us.
Yeah.
He was really like...
Hence, respect negative space. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Respect the negative space. That's going in notes. I gotta write that. I remember when I saw you live, you did something. I didn't exactly catch what was going on stage, but you stood up, turned around, and bent over towards us, and the back of your dress went, but it lined up with the tuba,
uh-huh.
and there was a burst of air from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and hilarious. Like, I'm so used to coming from the side of things where everyone's like, like, we're going to be tongue-in-cheek, but when we're on stage, we're all serious. And you guys get on stage and just horse around the entire time.
Yeah,
yet, there's six of you? Seven of you?
Six
of you?
Sometimes so.
I thought I saw seven at one point.
Sometimes
seven. Whatever. However many there were on stage, you guys are all weaving in and out of everything so much, yet horsing around, total circus, chaos on stage. Do you guys have bad shows?
Yeah.
Do you guys have shows where you're just like, oh my god, that thing malfunctioned and the air blew the wrong way?
With all the chaos that it seems to do, it's pretty organized. So in terms of musically, and we actually are getting to a point where we're starting to set up in our practice space like we're on stage and record it so we can start seeing what we're doing.
What's working and what isn't.
Too much dead space? Is this too much? Should we be having chemistry here?
Right.
You know?
Interesting.
You know, I think that what makes even our bad shows not bad is that, you know, all of the whole band is so dedicated. We have like the best crew, and I mean, that doesn't say that we don't fight, that we don't get, but like overall we're all here for the same reason.
Sure. Yeah.
And it is that, like, grab your person next to you elbow,
yeah.
like, raise your glasses, like, who knows if we'll fucking be here tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
us versus,
you know,
them,
yeah,
good house swinging,
is,
yeah.
And that's how we are every time we step on stage.
Right.
It's like, because all of this work is for naught if that doesn't happen there.
Right.
And because it's not about us.
Right.
Like, I think that gets lost in a lot of music, because to be a musician or an artist makes you self-absorbed, because you spend all this time focusing on your art.
Right.
That, you know, it's... That's your main focus, you know?
Right.
So it's like, but when we get on stage, it's not about our show or how good the show is. It's about what we do together, because that is what we do with the people in the audience. And for that show, the people in the audience are in our band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are there together. And that's something that's changed with us over the time. Like, when we first started out, it was way more cabaret. It was way more like, this is a show. And now it still is a show, but now it's like a call, more of a call to action. It's more of a, like, get off your fucking couch, pause your Netflix. It will be there when you get back.
Yeah,
there
right
are
on.
Living, breathing people out here.
It's an organic thing happening.
It
comes,
is.
It's a
yeah.
tangible
yeah.
thing. That's one thing that I can respect about you guys. Well, I mean, I was not just this is the only
just
thing.
This
is it. Other than that, P14 is a terrible mistake. No, I'm kidding. Dig the music. Don't dig the music. You got to see this. That adds a lot, because when it comes to rock music, if you like the music or don't like the music, that's about as far as we go.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're going to see if the dude's cute or the lady's
right.
hot,
mm-hmm.
or I'm a nerd and I want to check out their guitar cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, that's a whole different niche. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Niche. You guys are such a thing
Spectacle.
Spectacle. I was going to say calamity, but that has a negative. That has. You guys are so much to take in that even at one point I stopped watching you guys, and I was listening to you in the background. There was a gentleman down front who was dancing.
Are you talking about Arts Quest?
Yep.
I think I know who you're talking about. He was
the
crazy.
The president of the United States of America.
No, that's Arts. That was Freak Out Fest. He's like breakdancing, kind of. Like
sort of, but
it wasn't breakdancing, but it was some sort of urban-esque.
Breakdancing, but I'm pretty sure from the knees down he was made of pipe cleaners. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
He was so taken and just swept away with what you guys are doing.
At Arts Fest. Our record release.
Yes.
I was watching him. He was so into it, he became a part of the show. He took over the dance floor.
Right.
There were people coming up and dancing. Little kids were coming up and dancing with him.
Yeah.
I think my son ran up, and he grabbed his hands, and they kind of danced together for a minute. And I thought, this is spreading off the stage now. Like a minute ago, I was watching, and your dress flew up, and it was just hilarious. And now there's this guy who isn't involved with the band dancing with other people and trying to convince, like he was dancing and came over and grabbed one lady by the hand, and she was like trying to put her beer back on the
mm-hmm.
table. He was like, "Come dance with me." It just became this thing. Mm-hmm. You guys were smearing what you were doing off into the crowd, and
mm-hmm.
I thought, dig the music or don't dig the music. You can understand those people that don't enjoy.
That kind of
stuff, but you got to see this. You have to see this.
Well,
you know,
it's actually worked. It's great for us because we've seen that, like shows like that, that we'll walk into a place and be like, "There is no way that these people are gonna like what we do." And we played a hip hop festival in Brooklyn, and we were like,
God.
I mean, hip hop, straight up rap battles, like hip hop festival in Brooklyn.
There was some gangster rap.
And it was
there.
Like, and we played, and they went nuts. They went nuts. So
that surprises
seen,
me.
It, what we've seen, you know, where they don't like us? Tattoo conventions. They
yeah,
don't like us at tattoo conventions.
Why?
I don't
Bikers
know.
Bikers don't like us.
The only time
that
those tattoo convention people quacked was when I said, "This is our last song."
Yeah, it was like
what a bunch of dicks.
It was, and that happened to us twice at a tattoo convention in Stroudsburg and a tattoo convention
you know
in Allentown.
Though? In the end, when you're as like nuts as we can get and stuff, you have to expect like one or the other.
Yeah.
Sometimes you know. It's
fair
enough.
Sometimes.
But for the most part, we our crossover of our fan base is insane, and
yeah.
that's where
yeah.
we have talked at the end of the night where we're like, okay, even if we wanted to stop. We can't from the evidence that we're seeing.
Right.
You know, that things are just, things awesome. Are, you know, the crossover. But it's caused a huge, that, what you said, like it or leave, like it or not, you know, you have to see it, has, even though it's built an insane fan base and great shows and amazing shows and everybody that's come with us on the ride is so supportive and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's also been really difficult to expand into the industry. Because the industry is so watered down right now, they don't want to take chances. And you get, like, you know, 20 bands that want a slot, and they could play it safe with the ever-popular, you know, indie band that's doing the festival circuit, or they could play it with this band that is, like, this explosion of party music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, last year we had the woman, Vicky Walls, who runs Dewey Beach Music Conference,
mm-hmm.
like, go out on a limb to bring us. We'd,
mm-hmm.
we'd applied, like, 3 years in a row. Like, we've been applying to music conferences. We've never been accepted.
Hmm.
And last year, she brought us in, and she said, you know, "I think you guys are going to be an amazing party band." And the whole time we were there, everybody's talking about it. It's like, almost like we were the joke. Like,
yeah.
"Oh, you're the band with the accordion. Oh,
yeah.
you're that band with the
yeah,
tuba." And they exploded at the end of the night, and now we're in launch, like now we're in, but it's
yeah.
been the same thing with festivals, like
right
even
on.
Music Fest has been difficult
well,
for
wanted,
us
yeah however at Music Fest I wanted to mention is our demographic. That's one of the places I noticed. I saw like senior citizens buying our merch, and then like 13-year-old girls buying our merch,
and then like 7-year-olds coming up going, "Play
yeah,
that song
yeah,
where you pound your bones."
Yeah.
And it's so funny. It's so cute.
But that's when I realized, I was like, there is something going on here, because I mean, there's to have such a wide demographic.
Right on. Yeah, something to be proud of.
It's just a matter of waiting until people catch up.
I just heard on a podcast, damn me for not remembering what he said. And who said it? But he said, "The music industry is run by 15-year-old girls." That's who you're selling records to.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
And I'm talking on a pop level.
Yeah,
not,
yeah.
Not,
totally,
not what
totally,
I'm into.
Totally.
But that's it. Once you've gotten past that demographic, to use
mm-hmm.
your word, you're out to sea. Good
mm-hmm.
luck. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? You guys could appeal to the 15-year-old girl and the kid's grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Right. For some reason, you guys are just, you have to see this. Yeah.
Well,
something to be proud of, too.
Well, we're hoping that, you know, everything comes back around and the industry has changed forever because of the internet.
Yeah.
But it is balancing. You know, it exploded. Everything fell apart. Everything was like, but now everything is starting to balance. And musicians actually have the ability to make a living at what they're doing through licensing, through a lot of these streaming sites, if you treat it like a business.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are sitting, we've, you know, recently become CSEC affiliates. So now we collect performing rights royalties for when we play shows. We have all of these little, like our Sound Exchange for Pandora, our TuneCore or Spotify, all these things. And instead of hating them like most independent musicians do now because they're raping their, you know, we're working that. You know, mm-hmm. we are working that and then playing a shit ton of shows and then selling our CDs. Right. And it's creating many revenue streams.
Of income. You know, it's...
And so it's
that's another thing I heard a podcast. It's a river of nickels.
Right.
Yeah,
there's no big cha-ching payday. It's just collecting a handful of coins.
A shit ton of those nickels.
Yeah, you need a lot of buckets to collect the nickels in. Two things I want to circle around to. The night I met you, Sarah, I heard you talking to somebody else, and I remember just kind of sucking on my beer and listening mm-hmm. to you. You said something about a 30-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. '60s, '90s, and now, mm-hmm. and hopefully we're hitting the wave now.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again,
well,
because it was profound, and I remember thinking like, she's either insane, and she's saying that to convince herself that she can sleep tonight.
That could be it. That could be very, very true.
Or she's really got some neat insight about this.
Well,
so say that again.
The very first consultant we worked with, not Armitage, not the one we're working with now. We were working with on a business level because we were. You know, being as niche as we can be, especially then, we were even more so when we first started out. Our branding, we just didn't brand. We had no brand. We had nothing. We didn't know or care about any of that. We were just making music. And then we started realizing that we wanted to take this seriously. So we started talking to a guy who recommended a bunch of really amazing books that have ruined my life about the industry and marketing and branding. And since then, I've basically hated myself and my position. No, I don't really mean that. But it has been like a complete...
I hope not. This got dark.
Yeah. It, there's been dark moments because as
can we go back to you farting with the tuba?
Yeah. But no. So in researching all of this stuff that is really dark in times, basically because we live in a society for the most part that looks at music like a luxury and not a necessity or any of the arts, even gym now, you know, things like physical education now is like that. So reading all of this was just, you know, a pile of information that was just really heavy to bear in keeping in mind when you're trying to run a 6-piece band and make enough to where we can all at least keep doing this.
Right on.
And
sure.
Somewhere in this wealth of information, they were speaking about how the best time, the most lucrative time to be a musician in the industry was the 1930s, even though you didn't make the most money then. But then people were really gravitating towards music because of the condition our country was in. It's like the liquor, you know, booze, finding booze where they could, and going to listening to music is how people got through the day at that point because day-to-day life was so glib.
Okay.
The 60s were where musicians really first started making the most money. And then the 1990s was financially the best time to be a musician in America.
I gave a lot of money to those 90s.
Bands. Yeah,
it's really easy to sign.
But not even get signed. People then, the consumers were obsessed. They were collectors.
Yeah.
They would go buy a CD, and myself included, would go home and listen to it and read the inside insert from front page to back, buy the t-shirts, go to the shows, make mixtapes for their friends.
Preach.
So, like, there was so much happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all fell out. The whole bottom fell out. But in all this research, I realized that it was every 30 years. So my hope is, not just for the band, but for the industry in general, is that
just music.
It's always going to be different. And if you oppose the changing of the times, you are going to drown. Because no matter what...
It's too big.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I'm sure, you know, everybody thought music was dead when MTV came out. You know, you didn't need to see a video because it took away how you interpreted the song, you know, and all this stuff. There was like so many people, MTV was the end of the world, and now MTV doesn't even play music, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like everything is going to change, but what we're hoping is that it will again stabilize whatever the new stability becomes. And you just have to make sure you last until that point because it will matter to people again. I don't think that everybody's going to stay complacent. You know, even films are running out of options and they're doing remakes.
Oh my God.
And people now are getting sick of the remakes.
Right.
So it's like, something will come back around.
Yeah, I know. I just passed a movie poster for Snoopy. A CGI Snoopy is coming out. I was like, I have no desire.
Really?
I loved Snoopy.
Yeah.
No desire to see anything. No one has flashed anything across
CGI
my television
Snoopy.
For movies lately. I've been like, I don't care. Okay. Second thing was, I can't even repeat what you said. I don't remember what it was. Just before you said something about you're doing something to get the licensing thing?
Mm-hmm.
What? Say that again and explain
so,
it to me because I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, there is, unfortunately, we're not milking it as much as we should be.
Okay.
At these amazing music conferences, which whether you're playing the music conference circuit or not, if you're a musician, try to get to one because even if you don't perform there, because the resources of the panels and stuff are just amazing. And there was one at the Dewey Beach conference on licensing. And I believe, if I can recall, there's 5 different types of licensing royalties that musicians can be collecting on. But it's work to get, especially if you don't have a publisher. And even getting a publisher is expensive. But there's the most basic, which are your performing rights royalties, which are like ASCAP, BMI, and CSEC. And we had applied to CSEC for a couple of years and heard nothing as a referral. And we played a show with another CSEC artist last year in Nashville, and her representative was there and saw us and fell in love and was so incredibly supportive and said, I would love to. So our representative isn't even local. He's in Nashville. And he's got us on. And the way it works is that we could collect retro for
a
year prior to when they signed us on board.
So you basically sit at a computer and you put in every venue you played, what songs, you had to upload all your songs. It's pretty tedious at first, and then you just enter all that in, and then you get like 50 cents to a dollar, depending on the capacity of each venue. For every song. You get like 50 cents a song that you play.
No way!
Yeah, because
I didn't know that.
Venues like the Funhouse and all these places, they have to, if they're playing music over the radio or over the loudspeakers,
mm-hmm.
they have to put money, they have to pay for that.
Right.
That all goes into, like, basically a huge account. And that's where CSAT comes in, because we have, you, any band you're playing and stuff, you have a right to that money. And then if you don't
that's
get
why
it,
it's there.
Totally. And if you don't get it, every year that money goes, if you don't claim it, that money goes back into the government. So you just don't get
it. And it's like that in most of these, from what I recall from the panel, in most of these licensing things, like overseas radio, you should be collecting on radio, obviously. Just any, there's so many like hidden little nooks and crannies that it's just incredibly time consuming and monotonous. But once you get the ball rolling, again, it's more nickels, more nickels.
And it's insane how...
Lean towards the mic a little bit.
Sure, and it's insane how many people and musicians and fellow musicians don't know about this or don't take the time to research it.
Right.
And you know, I mean, I don't want to be like a millionaire. It would be nice or whatever, but I just want to have a sustainable living, and that's the name of the game nowadays. Like,
see, I think just to speak from my ignorant side of things, I do it because it's an art. I love playing the drums. I love being in a band and writing music and creating something and everything.
Sure.
Hopefully I can convince you to buy a t-shirt and a sticker. That will be the only time I make money, because the Funhouse really isn't going to give me much.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not bashing the Funhouse.
Yeah,
that's the name of the club I plugged in there. So there's no money to be made. You just have to do it because you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of it. Go home defeated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be 40 in August. That's pretty much what I've been assuming for 20 years.
Yeah.
I've never made a friggin' dime. The only time I ever made money doing this was because I was playing covers for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which
right.
can be so disheartening.
I know.
It can, and not that I think there's anything wrong with it, but sometimes we'll
play not that
a show.
Not that I hate Weezer, but I hate the fact that the only money I ever made was playing a stupid Weezer song.
My sister is in a country cover band, and they're making like $1,800 to $2,200 a night. I mean, that's. But I joined her cover band once, and I, for me personally, I'm not bashing cover bands,
right?
But for me, I can't do it. It just sucks my soul.
I'm and, with you. Yeah, totally. It hurts.
Well, I think it's hard for when you're a songwriter to spend your time playing.
It was
songs.
With the Kiriobi, and it was at a Fraternal Order of Eagles, and they were like, "No problem, the night's yours. You have to cover 3 hours."
Right.
Well, dude, I don't have 3 hours of original material. Well, then just fill it with covers.
Right.
So we're learning. we saved the Elvis song and the Garth Brooks song until the end, so we can get some shit stomping going on.
Right.
And at the end of the night, I just felt like, I just go home and take a shower. I just felt filthy for closing with "I've got friends in low places," you know, and I just felt like, oh God, I'm
my sister did.
I'm a dirtbag. But, you know, we each walked out of there with $100 too, you know what I mean? Because they made money on booze, because that's how this thing works. I don't know anything about the licensing thing. That's fascinating to me. I could nerd out on that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do anything about it. But I just I'm glad to hear that somehow you guys figured out a way to sit at a computer, upload songs, and throw another little pail into that river of nickels.
Right.
You know? Cuz I don't know how the licensing thing works at all. I don't think labels out there understand how it works.
There's no, even the publisher that was on the panel was saying that it's like, I recorded it on my phone because I couldn't wrap my head around half of what they were saying.
I have to go back and re-listen to what you just said.
Yeah, it's logistics, you know, and it's really, and they don't make it easy for you.
Sure.
They don't. Because
if you do it wrong, the government gets it. Of course, they're going to give you a
hoops
to jump
through.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's like anything. So, but there is so much. That's where I have, you know, we're a really good example. Now, I think, and this isn't to toot our own horn, but I think we were lucky because we do have, you know, strong music.
Yeah,
that is different.
Mm-hmm.
So we stand out, and that was that kind of made it a little easier for us because we were a little different in a. Giant, you know, drop in a giant ocean,
right?
Sonic ocean. So that helped, but there's so many ways that now is the best time to be a musician because we own what we're doing. It's not a label that's going to say, okay, you're going to be in debt to me and we're going to develop you as an artist, and you're going to do what we want. And then in years to come, you're going to end up like Les Claypool opening up your own vineyard because for so long you were a part of this industry that's now collapsing and you have to, at your age, go back to basic things because people are now streaming your music instead of going to your shows and buying it because
gross,
you know, it is. But you have to learn how to work that for you. And if you do, then it's not that bad because we have control. It's not the day of like, I think there's this big fantasy that a producer's going to find you and be like, we're going to make you rich, kid.
Yeah, yeah.
You are a star.
Stick with
and
me.
You know what? And you know who that was done to? Pop stars.
Yeah.
Even like Elvis, you know, and I love Elvis, but like he was a pop star of his generation.
Sure,
you know?
He was.
They were made into pop stars.
Yeah.
And that now they have, you know.
My kids are probably upstairs right now watching the 17th season of American Idol. We're training the next generation to do this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's parade out here and make sure you look a certain way, make sure you act a certain way. You definitely need to look like you're innocent and okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe in two albums we'll do the badass. You can start with the tattoos and get in the scene with a model at 2 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, we'll play the game. We'll run you through the ringer and we'll make you rich.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about soulless.
Right.
Well, I had a little girl have me sign her violin.
No way.
She brought a violin of hers to our show. She started playing in school because of the band. We've had Joe have a trombone player come up to him with her trombone. And we hear it from a lot of kids like, oh my God, we did not realize our band instruments could be this cool.
Cool.
So it can go the other way. It's just a matter of, you know.
Do you think it would be awkward if at the record release party I have your drummer sign my boobs?
Not at all.
Is that cool?
I'm sure. Yeah.
I'll bring a Sharpie.
He'd love it. I'm sure.
I'll bring latex gloves. Edit that part out. Stuff that'd be funnier. Just sounds creepy. Cool. We're getting towards the end here. Let's circle back around to May 19th. The album's supposed to be coming out. You guys are going on tour, like a legit tour. I know bands that say they're going on tour and they're going for 5 nights.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are leaving for a while. And tell us about that.
Yeah, we're leaving from May
27th
to like June 14th.
No, June 21st.
Oh, yeah.
Pushing a month out there on the road.
Totally.
That's legit.
Yeah.
It's shorter than our last couple, but
right.
we trimmed it back a little bit. Actually, our last show on the road is the 14th, and we have 3 days off home, and then we have another weekend of right. traveling about. So
okay.
it's like, you know, but then we actually opted to not do the full national right now, because we wanted to. A full national drains so much of your resources.
I can imagine.
So we're trying to build it by doing, you know, we're going to Texas and back. So we're not making it all the way out to the West Coast, because once you get past Texas, there's nothing, you know, like you're,
desert.
It's
there's
15
desert.
Hour drives to the nearest city, you
right.
know, and you're not playing when college is out,
Breaking
you're not
Bad
playing
Land.
Anywhere in,
yeah.
in between
yeah.
there. Like when it, yeah, when there's college in, you can hit college towns and it'll work. But at this time of year, college, you know what I mean? You can't rely on the college crowd. So we decided to lessen it to about 2-3 weeks and then do like 3 and 4 offs all throughout the summer.
Okay.
So we'll be doing like New England, Detroit, like stuff that we can get to within.
Yeah.
And then possibly the full national this fall, or maybe for South by Southwest in March.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But there will, it's the touring season.
We might be going back
so we'll,
to Atlanta for Dragon Con.
But yeah, so the album drops digitally May 19th.
You said drop.
I did. I know. Now it's
nice.
It's programmed. It's programmed now. The album drops May 19th digitally. It will be available as pre-orders through iTunes 2 weeks prior, which we'll have posted everywhere.
Okay.
I'll
retweet it.
Yes.
Uh huh.
There's a couple dozen more people that
yeah,
I see.
Yeah, retweet it.
Couple more equals.
Right.
Okay. yep. And then, but we are doing 2. Pre-release parties, so you can actually, it will be physically, you will be able to acquire it May 8th at the Funhouse in Bethlehem.
Yep.
With us in the Unholy Sideshow, or May 9th at Kings County Saloon in New York. We decided to do a New York City record release because that's where we recorded and
sure.
produced.
Yeah, yeah.
With an amazing, amazing lineup. Like the band that we're playing with, The More Obscure, is off the hook. And we have an operatic burlesque singer and a fire dancer and an acro yogist from New Orleans. And
man, New York gets all the good shows.
Yeah.
You said off the hook. You said dropped and off the hook now, too. The hip hop festival got into
yeah,
you.
It did.
Got into the bloodstream. Got under your nails a little.
It did. But.
Amazing. I don't know if you guys have anything else. You just plugged a lot, and I'm going to put a bunch of links and show notes and everything.
Cool.
But thank you so much for doing this. This
wow,
was this was a
having
blast.
Us.
This was really cool. I'm excited. I'm going to catch as many of these locally as I can. Yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm very excited for
thank
you guys.
You for
everybody's watching me. They say it as I drop to my knees. But remember the show that I put on for you yesterday. And I tell you I never wanna regress. To put it discreetly, I'd be a fucking mess. The way you want me to fail is so unnerving.
So, this past week, the Comcast cable, which is what I have, had a thing called Watchathon.
Okay.
And that is basically they allow you to stream all of the HBOs and Cinemaxes and Showtime stuff for free for 1 week. You can basically binge watch as much as you can fit into your schedule. And I
have no idea where you're going.
I'm getting to it. Okay. I noticed it on Sunday, which basically meant I had a couple hours left to enjoy it. it was like that the end of that week. I finally noticed. Oh wow, they're doing this.
Okay.
And I'm looking through all of the shows that I hear about and want to check out and never can because I don't have pay cable like the those big package deals. Mm-hmm. So I stumble across a show called Sonic Highways. And
oh god, here we go.
And basically, okay, you're a big Foo Fighters fan. I'm not a big Foo Fighters fan.
Right.
However, I am a fan of the idea of the Foo Fighters. And I've always enjoyed It's like anytime I see them, like if I'm channel surfing and they're on, I stop.
You're comfortable with the drummer. You're comfortable with the drummer being in charge. Is that what I just heard? That's what I pulled from it.
Oh god.
No,
I totally walked into that one, didn't I?
I just hit you in the face with a brick.
Only if you're in a band like Nirvana.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
So
all right.
So when you learn a guitar and you start writing songs, then we'll talk.
Okay, forget it.
But anyway, I love the guys in the band. I love Dave Grohl. I respect them, their history and all that stuff, and like I even like some of the earlier Foo Fighters songs. Yeah, I kind of wish I was a fan, but I just can't really get into the music. But What I love about them is they're at this position in their career where they're able to basically just do whatever they want.
Yeah, really.
And they're trying to do stuff that's not just like write an album, record it, write an album.
Exactly. That's what I love about them. That's what I don't get that you don't get.
Well, no, I get that part of them, and it's just like I love watching the process of their projects. When they did the documentary, and it showed them, the progression of their band and stuff, I was fascinated. And it's not so much the music; it's more about just the idea of this hardworking band doing new things, staying relevant by doing X amount of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings us to Sonic Highways. It's the name of their new album. It's they decided basically what I picked up from it was they decided to travel to various musical culture places in the United States where there's studios and
eight different cities. Yep.
Eight different cities, and they're going to record a song in a different studio and kind of engulf themselves in the rich history of, that area.
And I understand it. I haven't seen Sonic Highways, but I'm stoked that you're talking about this. I understand it that Grohl based the lyrics off of stories from people from each city, which is so cool.
Yeah, that's really, really, really rad. Yeah. But the thing is, I only had a few hours to catch it, so I only caught the first two episodes.
Okay.
They're one solid hour long each.
Okay.
And they're so well done that they jam pack these episodes. The reason I want to talk about it is because episode one, they covered Chicago, and there was a lot of cool stuff there.
Right.
Episode two, which was the last one I caught, was DC. And cool. They went to Grohl's hometown, Virginia, which is basically DC.
Mm-hmm.
And they covered Discord Records. They covered.
Really?
The Bad Brains, they covered Fugazi, Jawbox, Shudder the Thing, all that stuff was just crammed into it. And they went to Inner Ear Studios. They went to the classic studio where they recorded all of every hardcore record that matters or doesn't matter in the 90s and 80s was recorded at Inner Ear.
Right on.
And so they went in Chicago, they're in this gigantic studio, this enormous famous studio where all these classic, blues bands and like famous artists from that area came and played. Then they go over to DC and they're in this tiny little punk rock room with shaggy carpets and dirt and all these posters we wish we had like hanging up everywhere.
Right.
And Ian MacKay comes in and he's talking Minor Threat and there it's just like a 1 hour love dedication to the stuff we came up on.
I want to see this even more now.
The 90s, dude, and it is jam-packed. It shows Grohl, sitting down with Bad Brains, and they're talking about how, and they're not focusing much on the Foo Fighters. They're focusing on what made that scene awesome. And so there's, so you're getting the stories of the Bad Brains recording their first record and scaring people. And they tell the story how the one producer was sitting in a room with HR from Bad Brains, and they were just sitting there quietly together, and HR was staring him down, and he literally quit the job because he was scared of him. And that's what led to Inner Ear recording, and them doing I don't know, I forget the producer's name who recorded their first album, but just all that, it was all in there. And meanwhile, they cut to these clips of the band, you know, between them talking to the artists and immersing themselves, and like, yeah, this is what we came up on. Nate from, I guess his name's Nate, right? The bassist from Sunny Day Real Estate. He's talking about how, like, this is the one studio out of all the studios I most looked forward to because of, like, cool. You know, coming up on, you know, those bands. And dude, it's just an awesome show. It's just, you know, if you love music and you love, like, that kind of a thing, and just sort of watching a band's process of doing this experiment and immersing themselves in different cultures and getting these artists in on the projects.
You know who's been thumping on me to watch this is Brad Jacob, the guy that recorded the Unteachers album. And he told me, you of all of one of the people that I know have to see this, but at the same time, set a day aside, because by the time you sit down, if you get 20 minutes into the first episode, you're going to plant yourself on the couch and watch the series. So I've been like afraid to start it until I have time. So I just figure one of these days I'll get the flu or something, and I'll just sit down and binge it, and I'll probably think it's amazing. But I haven't watched 1 minute of it yet.
David Grohl.
I used to teach David Grohl in fourth grade. Little David Grohl. Never paid attention. Always interested in the punk rock.
That little whippersnapper Davy Grohl used to come up to me, and Davy Grohl is he's doing what I want to do, man.
Davy Grohl,
king of the wild front. All right, so cut all that. You know, every time you tell me to cut it, that's immediately the intro of our show.
Definitely leave that then. Wink.
Idiot.
So
yeah, he's definitely. I kind of admire his. Kind of jealous actually of his career.
Dude,
kind of wish, like, man, I wish we had the power to do what they do. Like,
if his resume, like, stopped at Nirvana, it's untouchable.
Yeah, right.
And then seriously, he like went on and recorded with everyone ever.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, the first episode in Chicago. Duh, Steve Albini. That was they did. They recorded with Steve. I love what they're doing. And,
okay. You just don't like the final result. You're just not wild about the music.
Well, I mean, even some of the stuff the two at the end of the episodes, they show them. They play the final, like, product. They play the song and they show them, you know, tracking, and you get to hear it. And I mean, one thing I have noticed about them is they've gotten heavier. Like, they're definitely, like, the new stuff. Obviously, the Discord Records, the DC track that they did, is super heavy. Like, it's just the guitar, the tones are just like, it's like they just said, all right, let's do like novelty era Jawbox and just crank it, and it's real fast and kind of has that punk energy. So, I mean, there's stuff to like.
Are the episodes in order? Like, I have the album, and I don't know which track went with which city. But if I had to guess, I think I know which track was done in DC then. I think I know which one kind of sounds like a...
The DC one's a real short, quick, almost like a punk sort of song. And it's just a lot of, like, power chord, just rocking real fast type stuff. If you're into the Foo Fighters, you're going to get a Foo Fighters record that's really diverse and probably has a difference in production as the tracks go.
I dig the new album. I think at this point... I mean, I don't listen to them every day. I'm not that guy, but... I think at this point I still like Wasting Light more. I have a couple buddies, even my other the other band that I'm in, Half Bomber, Leon, the bass player and singer. He was like, I don't know, man. I started listening to Sonic Highways more and more, and I think it overtook Wasting Light for him. So maybe I just haven't given it as many spins. I mean, I got 9,000 things to listen to all the time. I'll get to it when I get to it. But I like them all. I dig their style. They put on a 3-hour live show, and I definitely love 2 hours and 45 minutes of it. there's times where I feel like, why do you have to scream during the course of learning to fly? Like, all right, like, we get it. You're excited.
Yeah, and I kind of find him, his overall voice and the screamy stuff is kind of a little douchey, but
I think sometimes the placement is a little. I feel like in a conversation, it's all melodic, and then it's just wah! And I'm like, all right,
yeah,
settle down.
Yeah.
I'm 40, man.
Yeah,
quit screaming. But I don't know. Maybe 40. Maybe the kids dig it. Maybe little Davy Grohl is still working out. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
It's one of the, for me. It's one of those things where it's like when I'm watching him do that and I'm listening to it, I'm like, this is cheeseball, but I know you are still the real deal because I know where you've come up on.
It's almost like. Yeah, I that's a weird way to say it, but I think I kind of dig what you're saying. It's kind of like, I'll play the game. I'll do the pop thing, but I'm going to do it my way. And yeah. I'll do what you guys, you know, I'll play the kind of stuff you guys want to hear, but it's going to be what I'm going to be happy to. And it almost sounds like a compromise, because I do feel like if Grohl was just like, Foo Fighters be gone, I'm just going to do whatever I want, it wouldn't sound like the Foo Fighters. I mean, he did Probot.
Yeah.
I personally love the Foo Fighters from the front of their collection all the way up to Sonic Highways, and I like them Crooked Vultures even more. I love them Crooked Vultures. That's one of my favorite albums.
Yeah, that's a little
I
more
love
of my
that
alley.
Record. That's Queens of the Stone Age, Led Zeppelin, and Nirvana mushed together. Hell yeah, sign me up every day. I love that album. Love it. And I'm so excited to. I thought I heard they were going to do a second album eventually someday, and I'm in line for that. Definitely in line for that album. Speaking of being in line for albums, guess where I wasn't today?
Today's Record Store Day, so I'm imagining you are anti-Record Store Day.
I'm not anti-Record Store Day. I'm anti... Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am anti-Record Store Day.
Record Store Day is really just Black Friday.
Yeah, I don't refuse to go as much as I just feel like, dude, if it ain't there... When I get to a record store, then I'm not going to buy it. That's not how I like to shop for records. I don't like the whole hype behind it and everything. I know you feel the same way, and I played disc golf with my neighbor and started to build a rock wall in my yard. I'll get to the record shop next week. I don't care.
I think it's important for people to go to record stores and to flip through and keep that going. And obviously it's getting better just because. There's more awareness to the fact that it is the best format, and it's the best collector's format, and it's and more people are taking the time and doing that format. So, and we're fans of vinyl. There's no shock there. And Record Store Day, in theory,
I like the scratch.
Yeah, he liked the DJ.
I do.
The theory of Record Store Day is super awesome and important to me, and it's like, yeah, we need to have this more than once a year. But it's just, it turns into Black Friday because everybody's lining up for the doorbusters, and they run in and they get the exclusive to Record Store Day record, and then they fight over it, and then you're paying $50 to $200 for a stupid record. I don't care who you are. There's no record worth that much money.
No, and it's not Record Store Day's fault, but the fact that like the last time that I actually started going, maybe I will go out there and deal with the whole Walmart doors opening Furby thing for Record Store Day was the Circa Survive Sunny Day Real Estate 7-inch, because I was like, Sunny Day Real Estate's like,
I didn't even try.
One of the reasons I'm here. So I looked into it and I started to I don't know what made me do it, but I went on eBay, and before, like 3 days before Record Star Day, it was already on eBay for like $69, and I was like, see, that dude doesn't even have it yet, or he's an insider who knows that there's, and it got to this gross level of like, you want a Nintendo? I got a Nintendo, meet me down the alley kind of a thing. And I kind of felt like that's not the spirit of what records... When I go to the record store, it's like a little bit at a time, people trickle in there, build a relationship with the guy behind the counter, like Jamie at Double Decker in Allentown. What up if you're listening? Probably not, but anyway, whatever. Chris at Double Decker. I know these guys. Invite them over for dinner, but hey, Trav, how are you? Dude, what's up? What's going on? What's hot? What's not? It isn't. Yeah, the circus at 8 o'clock. The doors are open. That's not that.
Well, first of all,
facilitate
what,
that.
What record store buyer goes to the store at 7 o'clock in the morning? I mean, that changes it right there.
Chance. Record stores are all about chance. I got there. I saw Kiss It Goodbye vinyl that hasn't been open. Oh my God, it's on white. Yes, I'll take it. As opposed to be here at 8 o'clock, muscle your way in here, and if you're first in line, maybe they're handing out. It's turning into like an iPhone thing, and I just hate that that's happening.
And then, well, not only that, I mean, the prices are insane. You should be able to go to a record store. And if we want to keep record store day alive and keep the love of music and purchasing physical formats in an age where there's this huge threat of physical formats dying off, okay, well, maybe make it affordable for people.
Yeah.
Like, go to a record store, find a bunch of cool stuff for a dollar, maybe that one rare find for $10 to $20, and come home with a pile of dusty records and say, I found some cool stuff. Like, look... I'm a record collector. I'm not out at record store day. And the reason for that is I'm not the person who has $3,000 to spend on freaking music. Yep. And the people that do that, like, deeply concern me. The people that, like, go out and spend hundreds of dollars on records in one day are disturbing. Mm-hmm. Like, I love you, record people, but you're disturbing. What person who collects records has thousands and thousands of dollars to just waste on records? It's just like... And why should it? Why should they cost as much as they do? They should be cheap. They should be obtainable, and we should be able to go and have fun, flip through, and bring something home. And I'm here on Record Store Day, not buying records because I can't afford it, which is stupid.
Yeah, Record Store Day 2015 has been great. We've had our biggest line this morning. We had people lining up at 4 o'clock. We had 250 people waiting out here before we even opened the doors. And had a really strong rush for the exclusive releases that came out today, including the new Built to Spill record. It's been pretty steady all day. Mother Nature's been cooperating with us, and it's just been a really, really fun weekend so far.
Love you. Take care. Bye-bye.